podcast number two. My name is Chris Vaccaro.
I'm Deanna.
I'm Chelsea Dunette Smith.
I am Sophia Henninger. And we're still talking about How to Lie with Statistics by Daryl Huff.
There we go.
Okay, so I'll start it off. Okay, so we read chapters 3 and 4 and started going through chapter 5 a little bit. And what I noticed that was most interesting in chapter... What I noticed that was most interesting in chapter 3 was how they talked about families and the average housing for an American family. And it says that fits 3.6 persons. So what that really means is that it fits between 3 and 4 people in a house. And within that house, there's 2 bedrooms. And then the type of people that live in that house are minorities. And what they also seem to have left out is just the... they left out how the difference between a big family versus a small family and things like that. So I just wanted to get everybody's opinion on that.
I mean, like this study just, and like what you said about it, shows something that they do in almost every poll they take. No matter how broad they try and make the spectrum of people they include, they're always going to leave out a certain group. Like you said that for the type of people who live in those homes tend to be minorities. So in another poll, they might leave out, you know, people who work during the day or people who drive to work and stuff like that. So just every poll is different, and there's no way to get a consensus of every single type of person.
I wouldn't exactly say it for that it's all American families, because I'm pretty sure there's people with three bedroom houses or 4 bedroom houses. Nowadays, that's what they usually make. And back in the day, they settled for the two bedroom.
Yeah, I think it depends on the family situation. Like, if they don't have that much money, to buy a big house for their family, and of course they want to go with a 1 bedroom or 2 bedroom apartment. In chapter 3, it talks about how a child at a certain age should know how to sit up straight. And they say if the child doesn't know how to sit up straight,
they tend to think that he retarded.
And I don't think that's true.
Yeah, referring to the book,
it talks about how they're looking at parents who are reading books and how they think at a certain age their child should be at this point in their life and how a certain age they should be there. And then it also talks about how it's something called the gestalt norms, and it just says that it produces pain in the moms and dads, because they have the mothers and fathers thinking that their children need to be at a certain point at a certain time. They're not, and they're mentally stable, or something's wrong with them, or they have a, or they're just subnormal, or anything can go wrong with it.
See, the way I think of it as people are gonna take their time out to grow. Like, not everybody's gonna get facial hair at the same time, you know? Like, right, it's right. Gonna take time. Like, people are gonna grow on their own time when they feel the need to grow, when they're capable of growing, when they have the room to grow.
Like Chris is saying, they should be able to grow at their own speed. It shouldn't matter. The statistics shouldn't matter, or when a book says that a child should be at a certain point, because every child is different. That's up to the child to choose and when they're ready to be at that point. So.
And so now we're looking at page 50 in the book, and right here they're talking about how sometimes companies or advertising campaigns use graphs. And when people see graphs, usually they think, you know, this is facts, this is numbers. But a lot of times these advertising campaigns just use this and use the way people think of them to mislead. So in a lot of these it says, you know, the value of this product will just keep on going and just keep rising, or that this energy release will be so much more efficient than, you know, the version before it. And if you actually sat there and looked at the numbers and looked at everything, it's a complete lie.
Basically, for instance, what allows statistics is to have dead on a graph look the same, but one can be larger than the other with no labels or numbers, but it can be the exact same thing.
Yeah, go ahead. Oh, yeah, like Chris was saying, because in the book it has a picture of a of two graphs, and they're going at this. It looks like they're going at the same slope, but in reality, the way that they drawn it out is what's messed up. So it's saying that it takes 1 minute to get somewhere, but it actually is taking, and it, oh, it's actually taking 1 minute to get from the same thing in both graphs. So on page 72, we were looking at the Crescent Cal, and it was talking about how in 1860, there were about 8 million cows in the United States. And then by 1936, there were more than 25 million. But with the picture shown, it shows a cow in 1860 that was real small. And then in 1936, a cow that's about three times bigger than the cow in 1860. And with this, this can be misleading because people may read this as though cows in 1963 were bigger than cows in 1860.
But then again, that doesn't exactly mean anything because you could see it from a different point of view, whether you're far away or whether you're up close. I'm pretty sure cows are around the same same amount of weight, same amount of height.
That they were back then?
Yeah. Like, what changed? Unless it's like a baby compared to a human. I mean, not compared to a human, compared to an adult.
I mean, honestly, like, if you just look at it, that whole thing is misleading. Like, if it's a quantity thing, why are they making size look like it's the thing that's changed? It just seems to me, to begin with, like, kind of stupid. Like, why don't you just at least have a graph or something that shows how the population is different instead of misleading people into thinking the size is different?
Yeah.